Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, and this morning's conversation is with Fran Minella, Director of the National Park Service, which is with the Department of Interior. And joining us in our conversation is Tom Maui. Well, Fran, can you give us an overview of how the National Park Service was founded?
I would love to, Paul. It's really a great story because the National Park Service as an entity was actually created in 1916. That was the Organic Act, and the first director was Stephen Mather. But actually, prior to that, there were many parks that were already being formed. And in fact, back in 1864, Congress donated the Yosemite Valley, which now has come on to be Yosemite National Park, to California for a state park. So it actually was protected as a state park for a while and eventually came on to us a little bit later. But of course, most of us know about Yellowstone. It was our first national park, created in 1872, which is prior to the 1916 creation of the National Park System. But it was held because at that point, there was no way, like California had a state park capability. The Wyoming and Montana territories did not. And so Congress had us hold on to Yellowstone, even though it wasn't considered a national park, and came on to be part of the park system officially, of course, in 1916. But 1872 is the credited creation of Yellowstone that we look at. Also, Congress was very important in creating other parks earlier on in the 1890s and early 1900s, including Sequoia National Park out in California. It was actually our second national park. Yosemite, that we already spoke about, Mount Rainier, Crater Lake, and Glacier National Park. And by 1916, when the system actually was created as a national park system, there were already really 14 national parks and 21 national monuments that really didn't have an organization around which to manage it. So it was President Woodrow Wilson who signed the law to create the National Park Service within the Department of Interior. So the Department of Interior was kind of holding on to those areas before that, but it wasn't under the title of a national park system. But now we are so pleased to have that as part of our system. And as I said, we're up to 388 national parks.
I think it's easy to think about Yellowstone when you think about the Park Service. Let me ask you a question. Why is the park's northern range still a critical issue today?
The northern range has been such an important area because of the diversity that it has. It represents the only place in the lower 48 where there is a full complement of all the species of large mammals and large predators that carry out their roles in a complex eco-web or ecosystem. And that is really important for us. And it's the great wildlife, the rich variety that has made Yellowstone such a significant part of all that we do. And so we're very excited about it. Of course, we also have elk, and we've had reestablishment of the wolf being brought back, and that's been a successful effort. Of course, we are working with our neighbors to make sure that it doesn't have a negative impact on those that are having cattle and other aspects. Just recently, Lawrence Rockefeller passed away, and of course, he was very instrumental, along with John D. Rockefeller, who helped us with creating the Memorial Parkway and Grand Teton Mountains. Lawrence Rockefeller was very instrumental, so all that play together. You're probably aware, too, we do have some controversy at Yellowstone dealing with the snowmobile issues. And most recently, we have been trying to work forward with a way that would give us environmentally friendly access to Yellowstone on snowmobiles, because as you're probably aware, once the snow comes in, there really isn't a way to drive in on a normal basis into to see Old Faithful. And that is quite an experience to be able to accomplish, to get into that area. And President Clinton had passed a law right before he left office, which was going to say that there would be no more snowmobiling in Yellowstone, and in fact, and including Grand Tetons, and it would only be snow coaches. And that ruling was just recently struck down by a federal court, saying that ruling will not prevail, and have directed us to come up with a ruling that we can implement for the winter season of 2004-05 to implement environmentally friendly access. We're going to keep the snow machines on the roads that you and I drive on in the summer. We're going to make it best available technology, which means that at this point it's usually four cycle engines that are meeting certain standards. They have to be certified that they meet air quality rules and noise. We also are going to have everything guided. meaning that the guides will be taking people in and out. It will make sure that any involvement with speed or with our bison are properly handled, because the guides will have to have been certified themselves, and they will lose their certification if they do not follow the rules. And then also, we'll be doing adaptive management, meaning that if the machines do not achieve the 90% improved air quality that we're looking for, then we will reduce the numbers further. This new rule will have a lower numbers than we've ever allowed in the past into Yellowstone. So we're, again, excited about working on this challenge of a new rule, and we do hope to have it in place for this winter season.
Over the last several years, the National Park Service has seen an increase in funding. What are the factors that have led to this upward trend?
Well, we have the biggest budget now and the most full-time employees than we've ever had in the history of the National Park Service. We have really increased what we've done on our maintenance backlog. The president committed to something that isn't very glamorous in parks, but it is absolutely critical, which is making sure your sewage treatment and others is a good place, that your bathrooms don't have leaking ceilings, that your plumbing is in good place, your electrical, your air conditioning, your trails, and then, of course, some other areas that we've worked on. We've already going to have spent about $3.9 billion towards that effort, and we hope over a six-year period it'll be about $4.9 billion that we will have worked on. We've also been increasing, in fact, our budget right now is 20% higher than it was when the president took office in 2001, and so we're excited about that. But we have had a few additional challenges. Our challenges have been increased law enforcement that we are spending money on that we were not spending on as aggressively before, and so that has been a challenge for us. We also, though, have had more money go towards fire protection and removal of exotic or invasive species, as well as where the vegetation in the forest have gotten too thick, where we need to go in and use prescribed fire or other techniques to thin that out. We've also spent more money than we've ever done on natural resources, which has been a good, I mean, all these are good things, but they are costing us more money. We've done the Natural Resource Challenge, which the president has supported. So we average now about almost $100 million a year that we've been spending on natural resources, which is inventorying those resources and other things of that nature. And again, we've talked about the maintenance that has been in big areas. So we've been very proud of what we've been able to accomplish, but also in the 2005 budget, this president has come forth with increase of the operational dollars, the everyday operational dollars, the ones that keep the visitor centers open, the ones that clean the, so people can clean restrooms. We're seeing an increase on that in both House and Senate at this time, have in their budgets that they'll go into conference with increases for that effort as well. So we're very excited about what we've been able to do in the funding, but we do need to continue that operational increases as well as maintaining our other areas. The president has really helped us, and we again have accomplished almost 4,000 improvement projects over these last 3.5 years in our parks.
You mentioned invasive species, and I know that's one of the priorities in terms of land management threats to the Park Service. Could you tell our listeners what an invasive species is and give us some examples of what you're doing to control this?
Right. Invasive species in particular, I'm going to talk initially vegetation, which is, you know, plants growing. There is invasive species. Would you get into, they can be like hogs and other things that come into land that don't belong there. They're not native to that area. For the most part, invasive species are usually non-native, meaning not from that particular area. They don't belong in that place, like the Melaleuca tree in Florida. That was my old stomping grounds. Melaleuca was brought in from outside the Florida area, and in doing so, it grows so quickly, it doesn't allow anything else to grow around it. So your native plants that normally will hold the ground in place, hold the soil in place, and then also let the native vegetation come forth, is eliminated because of the invasive species. I'm going to give an example. It was Australian pines, another invasive in Florida, that when Hurricane Andrew hit in 1992, it turned out to be for one of my parks down there called Cape Florida in Key Biscayne. That was the best exotic removal we've ever had of invasive species, because it was 400 acres of these trees that came down that we were not able to eliminate prior to, and because they couldn't hold the soil, they just went over and did damage to people's homes, to the park, Now we have a park that's been restored thanks to Congress and everyone that in the governor in Florida, we were able to restore that park and get it so it has nothing but in it, you know, it's all native vegetation, which means if a hurricane comes again, the land will stay in place. It'll be in much better shape. We've also recently been working on that in Canyon de Chelly, which is in Arizona, and that's removing tamarisk, which is a big removal, and the for the Navajo tribe that resides there, the tamarisk has soaked up all the water that belongs to be normally flowing. And by removing that invasive species, it'll allow the water to flow again in the basin so that Navajos can do their cattle and farming.
That's interesting, especially a part about absorbing the water. One of the areas called out in the president's management agenda is competitive sourcing, which some would characterize as the most controversial. What is competitive sourcing and how does it work? We'll ask Fran Minnell of the Park Service to explain this to us and describe the experience the Park Service had with competitive sourcing when the Business of Government Hour returns.